News, her daily at 6 p.m. Stay tuned for Extinction Rebellion Radio coming up. Once again, this is WBAI New York, 99.5 FM and WBAI.org online. Stay tuned.
You're listening to Extinction Rebellion Radio on WBAI.
Welcome to the Rebellion.
Welcome to Extinction Rebellion Radio on WBAI with Matthew Kearney and Elise Lane. Extinction Rebellion is an international movement that uses nonviolent direct action to press for action on the climate emergency. Today, we are speaking with Buffalo, New York mayoral candidate, India Walton. Ms. Walton is a nurse and a longtime community activist now running as an unapologetic Democratic Socialist. Welcome, India.
Thank you for having me.
So this is a fun fact. Back in 1969, my dad ran for mayor in Buffalo, New York. His name was Ambrose Eileen.
Oh, wow.
And he was the first, he was the first Black person to run for mayor in Buffalo. Now, he ran not on the Democratic ticket. He ran on a Unity Independent Party ticket. And in 1969, when he announced his candidacy, one of the things he said is, "I strongly believe that the people of this city deserve more than a choice between the lesser of two evils." Mm-hmm. Another thing that he said, can you believe it? I actually have the press release. He said the word independent was chosen because we believe that neither established party has freed itself from the deadening past. This city must have leadership that has relevance, vigor, and vision. Not much has changed, has it?
Not much has changed at all.
Well, it's such a pleasure, and I'm sure he would be a real champion, one of your real champions. Talk about your platform a little bit.
Sure. So, you know, I often describe both the platform and the campaign as centered on people and rooted in love. Our current administration, our current structure and system has failed working class and poor people. I think it's about time that people are removed from the fringes and Absolutely. Brought into the center of society, and that our government's role is to function in a way that prioritizes people over profit.
Yes.
Speaking of prioritizing people over profit, yes. So we've read that fossil fuel emissions are currently at the same level as 30 years ago in Buffalo, even though Buffalo has lost population during that time. So what can we do about this? Do you have any innovations in mind, whether that's involving decreasing car usage or public transit or something else? What do you think about the fossil fuel emission situation in Buffalo?
Buffalo is a very car-centric community. The culture here is centered around cars, right? You have an event and the first question people ask is there parking? And I think that though we have a long way to go, we've made significant improvements in prioritizing pedestrian and cycling infrastructure and making our community more walkable and pedestrian friendly. One of the most ambitious parts of our platform, which is really dependent upon state and federal funding, but is to remove the 33 expressway that severed the east side of Buffalo from itself, pretty much, but has caused some of the worst health outcomes in poor and brown communities in the city of Buffalo. So I think improving infrastructure, making the walkability of our community better, as well as addressing the fact that we don't need cars for everything,
right,
and working with our public transit system to have a robust multimodal system of transit will reduce emissions from vehicles, hopefully.
What does it mean to remove an expressway? Do you block it off? What happens to that built environment?
Yeah, so there are a couple of plans already in the works. There is an organization called Restore Our Community Coalition that has two options. One is to cap it, which is the cheaper but less beneficial. The other is to fill it in and restore the parkway that existed. Buffalo has a really significant park structure that was designed by Frederick Law Olmsted, and restoring the Kensington Expressway to Humboldt Parkway, where it used to be, will reconnect Martin Luther King Park to Delaware Park and restore the parkway that once existed.
You know, with the current ecological crisis, it is increasingly clear there will be more climate refugees, both internal and international. How are you going to build infrastructure to support what looks like a population increase in the Buffalo area for the upcoming years?
You know, currently in Buffalo, we already have a housing crisis, right? We have a crisis of affordability. We have a crisis of the ability to house our houseless. We have some of the oldest housing stock in the country. So we have to really ramp up the type of development and the number of units that we're developing to be able to accommodate not only our current needs, but also the influx of folks that we're going to see coming. We already accept lots of immigrants and refugees, but also as we see climate disasters happening in other places of the country and world, we know that a lot of folks are going to be resettling in Buffalo. So we have to be prepared economically to be able to receive folks, give them the services that they require, be able to keep up capacity-wise in our education system, make sure that we're creating good, green, living wage jobs. You know, this is a big undertaking, and I feel like we have not put enough thought into it as a municipality to ready ourselves, but a Walton administration is going to prioritize making sure that we're ready to receive folks as they come.
What are your views on citizens' assemblies? Could those be a way of getting around the entrenched partisan interests in American politics, either at the city level or even more generally? Or can they otherwise accomplish good things? What do you think about this whole concept of a citizens' assembly having some level of political input or even direct political power?
I think that neighborhood assemblies is a great idea. I am a person who truly believes that it's my job to lead by the consent of the governed. And that means that those who I govern are not always of voting age. They do not always have the legal status in order to cast an official vote, but that their opinions do matter. So a part of our platform is to establish neighborhood assemblies where folks are able to voice their concerns and their wishes and wants and needs and have them acknowledged as a real part of our political process. A Walton administration is going to co-govern with the people and not on top of. So I think that is really exciting that you raised that as a point. A part of the reason why I was politicized to begin with was because I attended a conference in Barcelona in 2016 called Fearless Cities that centered around municipalism and the notion of all voices having an equal say, no matter your ability to vote or not.
We understand that a third of Buffalo's budget goes to the police, rolling back what seems particularly important in this time of racial inequality and injustice. Would you outline your plans on how you are planning to address those issues?
Yeah, the answer is definitely not more police and more military, right? The answer is more love and more care and more mutual aid. And our public safety plan centers around making the best use of our resources, freeing police to do the work of police. While I am an abolitionist in my heart, we have not built the structures to replace what currently exists. We have to start somewhere. We're definitely going to be capping overtime. I believe that workers still should be valued no matter what their job. And I don't believe in implementing policies without speaking with and in consultation with the people who do that job. So I want to work with police to free them of the responsibility of homelessness outreach, of being mental health counselors, of addressing what we have classified as crimes that are really behaviors that are driven by concentrated poverty, substance use, and mental health issues, really getting to the root causes of crime, and also giving officers, you know, the support that they need to be successful, incentivizing and enforcing residency requirements so they feel connected to the communities that they serve, so we rebuild trust, making sure that we are holding bad actors accountable so that we can, you know, begin to heal as a community and know that when someone is doing their job poorly, when they're breaking laws under the guise of being behind a badge, that they are held accountable also. And that's how we begin to heal, build trust, and ultimately move forward as a community. If folks are listening and like what they hear, not only if they like what they hear, but they have any indication as to what is happening here in Buffalo. I unseated a 16-year, four-term incumbent in a primary election. And rather than him concede and facilitate a productive transition, he's decided to wage a write-in campaign that's being powered by the GOP and members of the far right. I would encourage folks to go visit my website at www.indiawalton.com. Sign up to volunteer, donate. We're phone banking. There are folks thousands of volunteers on this campaign from all over the country. And we need all hands on deck in this moment. This is not only about Buffalo. This is about the future of movement. This is about the protection of democracy and allowing the choice of our voters to stand.
You are listening to Extinction Rebellion Radio on WBAI 99.5 FM New York, co-hosted by Elise Lane and Matthew Kearney. We are speaking this week with India Walton, a nurse and community activist, and a candidate for mayor of Buffalo, New York. She is, as I understand it, the only candidate on the ballot in Buffalo after she defeated the incumbent in a primary election. Then, in a move that raised major questions about the rule of vote-based democracy and important questions over which elections are final and which are not, that incumbent, who India Walton already defeated, is now running against her via a write-in campaign. The election is this coming Tuesday, November 2nd, 2021. That is 1 week from this broadcast. Back to our interview now to hear a little bit more from India Walton.
And a lot of political theory and economic theory, there's this concept of capital flight. If you do something that big business doesn't like in one locality, they'll just pick up and move to another locality. And that's a big dilemma that socialist reformers or left-oriented reformers have as far as what sorts of policies they can put into place that will actually be effective. What are your thoughts on this situation? It's a complicated question, right? Like, what do we do when there are interests that are local and they have the ability to move to a place that doesn't have as much of a left or progressive orientation? What do you think?
I think that the answer is a lot more simple than that. And from my perspective, when people are less poor, they invest more in the local economy. And Buffalo is unique in that we do have a hyper-local economy. We have a very robust small business community. And when I have conversations, even with the larger developers, I'm like, you're building apartments, and if we make people less poor, they'll be able to afford to live in them. I mean, it just makes sense economically to me. And I think a lot of the policies that we make with the fear of corporations packing up and leaving, we've proven through the pandemic that we'll survive. And even when we empower the working class, it doesn't make rich people less rich. They're going to continue to be rich, and they'll be fine.
All right. Thank you very much, India Walton, for sharing your time with us. We wish you great luck on your campaign.
Thank you so much. And I'm going to do more research about your father's mayoral campaign, because now I need to know. So, you know, you may hear me pulling some quotes and sharing them.
All right. Wonderful. You have a wonderful day and good luck.
You too. Thank you so much.
All right. Bye-bye.
So in Extinction Rebellion, we often say that we are an apolitical organization. You hear that word used sometimes in Extinction Rebellion conversations, apolitical. And participating thoughtfully and carefully and attentively in a lot of conversations, I found that the word could mean different things to different people. Meanwhile, we here at Extinction Rebellion Radio have just interviewed a political candidate. India Walton is running for mayor of Buffalo, and the election is coming up in November. So I wanted to just comment on that. XR is, I don't think anyone believes that XR is apolitical in the sense that we're not trying to influence policy or think carefully about policy or comment on policy. Obviously, we're trying to do all those things. It's fine to talk about politics. What we're not is mainly an electoral organization where we like get involved in campaigns, endorsing candidates, or get sucked into the Democratic Party, or for that matter, the Republican Party. That's what we're trying to, I think we're in fairly broad agreement that we're not trying to do that. We're not trying to become Move On, which did get sucked into the Democratic Party. That started out as a grassroots organization and became a Democratic Party interest group, in effect. India Walton is in an interesting category. She's the only person on the ballot, as I understand the legal status. So that puts her already in a different place than most candidates for significant positions. They almost always have opposition on the ballot. And the second thing is she's a different phenomena. She would be the first democratic socialist mayor of an American city in 60 years, assuming she gets elected in November. And that's a place in the political location that is somewhat different. In fact, it's new at the mayoral level, new in our lifetimes, new in my lifetime. And asking that person about fossil fuels is worth doing, is worth spending some time on. Asking that person about the issues that we at Extinction Rebellion are concerned about. So I don't see this interview as an indication that we're becoming an electoral organization, merely that we're trying to analyze, understand, and talk about the full sweep of things that influence what we're doing, which is ultimately to try to reduce fossil fuel emissions and create a better, healthier environment and world. Anyway, that's what I think about the apolitical situation and why we had this particular person on the show.
So it feels like I'm working harder these days. I'm working longer hours. My food budget's the same budget I had last year. And yet I'm bringing home smaller and smaller and smaller bags of groceries every week. This experience probably resonates with many of you, and there's a reason for that, right? Extreme climate change-driven weather is wreaking havoc on crops and other foods all over the world. Bloomberg Green recently reported that, for example, quote, Brazil's worst frost in two decades brought a deadly blow to young coffee trees and the world's biggest grower. I love coffee. That makes me sad. Flooding in China's key pork region inundated farms and raised the threat of animal disease. Scorching heat and drought crushed crops on both sides of the U.S.-Canada border. And in Europe, torrential rains sparked the risk of fungal diseases for grains and stalled tractors in soaked fields, end quote. So all of that extreme weather is having an impact on the availability and the price of food. According to the Food and Agriculture Organization of the United Nations, world food prices are 31% higher than they were at this time last year. 31%. Tell me something, y'all. Did your pay go up 31% this year? Mine sure didn't.
I think most people's didn't. A month or so ago, we talked on this show about how the heat wave in the Pacific Northwest killed off billions of sea animals. That's billions with a B. We talked about how our climate wildfires kill off millions of land animals as well. As naturalist William E. Simpson II estimates, 8 to 10 animals are destroyed per acre during wildfires. 8 to 10 per acre. So when you hear about X number of acres being destroyed, multiply that by about 10. That's how many animals died from that wildfire estimated. Now, when we talk about this mass death of animals, we didn't talk about it in terms of food. Instead, we talked about it as the loss of life and as the price that other sentient beings pay so that we can continue to burn fossil fuels. But that mass death was also about the loss of food. You know, when Bill Clinton ran for president back in 1992, he had a sign in his campaign headquarters that read, "It's the economy, stupid." Well, maybe we need a sign that says, "It's food and water, stupid." It's food and water. Now, the word stupid might not resonate with you, but at some point, stupid just becomes a fact. It's an inconvenient truth. As we continue to fail to address these rudimentary ecological devastations that we're all experiencing and suffering from, at some point, it's just stupid. In its sixth assessment report, the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, IPCC, tells us that as our Earth continues to warm, there will be more times during the course of a year when temperatures exceed what crops can stand. Consequently, food production will suffer, which will increasingly impact the food supply. Less corn, less soy, less wheat, less food that relies on those things to grow itself. And that's going to take other crops as well. That's going to take more and more money out of our pockets for less and less food, just like what Elise is finding. Same food budget, less food to be bought. And many people will just go hungry.
You know, speaking of climate crisis hunger, Madagascar is suffering a famine that is the first famine ever caused entirely by our climate crisis. Time magazine reports that in Madagascar, quote, 1.14 million people are food insecure and 400,000 people are headed for famine. Hunger is already driving people to eat raw cactus, wild leaves, and locusts, a food source of last resort, end quote. Now pause a minute and just let this fact sink in. Madagascar is suffering a famine that is the first famine ever caused entirely by our climate crisis. Given our inaction on climate change, the Madagascar famine won't be the last famine caused entirely by our climate crisis. ...2020 was, quote, the most dangerous year on record for people defending their homes, land, and livelihoods, and ecosystems vital for biodiversity and the climate, end quote. That's according to Last Line of Defense. That's the latest report issued by Global Witness on the killing of land defenders. Global Witness is an organization that, quote, holds companies and governments to account for their destruction of the environment, their disregard for the planet, and their failure to protect human rights, quote, end quote. Since 2012, it has been keeping track of lethal attacks on environmental defenders all over the world. 70% of those we're calling defenders were killed trying to save the world's forests from deforestation and industrial development. 30% of those killed were fighting resource exploitation, such as logging and mining, as well as the construction of hydroelectric dams and other infrastructure. Now let this sink in for a minute. People are being killed because they're defending the land, defending the trees, defending the air, defending the water. Corporations and private citizens are willing to kill to keep all of us on their deadly earth-killing trajectory. And of course, they're also more than willing to have you imprisoned for defending the environment. Now, if these facts don't compel you to abandon your business-as-usual climate activism, nothing will. For 2020, Global Witness recorded 227 deadly attacks on environmental defenders, an average of more than four people a week. Over half of these attacks took place in Colombia, Mexico, and the Philippines. With 65 murders under its belt, Colombia has the distinction of being the most lethal country for earth defenders.
These lethal attacks, Global Witness reports, are, quote, taking place in the context of a wider range of threats against defenders, including intimidation, surveillance, sexual violence, and criminalization, end quote. Again, these are people protesting against deforestation, resisting logging and mining, resisting environmental destruction in all its many forms, and they're being assaulted and killed. Global Witness goes on to say that, quote, many companies engage in an extractive economic model that overwhelmingly prioritizes profit over human rights and the environment. This unaccountable corporate power is the underlying force that has not only driven the climate crisis to the brink, but which has continued to perpetuate the killing of defenders. In too many countries rich in natural resources and climate-critical biodiversity, corporations are operating with almost complete impunity. Because the balance of power is stacked in the favor of corporations, it's rare that anyone is arrested or brought to court for killing defenders. When they are, it's usually the triggermen, the ones holding the guns, not those who might be otherwise implicated directly or indirectly in the crime. End quote. So all that was a quote from Global Witness. And they just put it as well as we could. For more information, you can download a copy of Last Line of Defense at globalwitness.org. This is Extinction Rebellion Radio on WBAI 99.5 FM New York with Elise Lane and Matthew Kearney. WBAI is, of course, part of the Pacifica Radio Network, the only purely listener-supported radio network in the United States. And when we can, we always like to work in a mention that we do rely on listener financial support to function. Pacifica Radio Network is unique within the media landscape, and WBAI welcomes your support.
This is Randy Credico, host of Live on the Fly here on WBAI. Join me Wednesday, October 27th, for a special edition of Live on the Fly from 2:30 p.m. to 4 p.m. on the first day of the extradition appeal for WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange. That's Live on the Fly, special edition, Wednesday from 2:30 to 4 p.m. right here on WBAI in New York City. Listener sponsored WBAI.
Which comes to you every Wednesday at 2 p.m. on WBAI 99.5 FM. Together with my co-host, nurse, family therapist, Richardina Theodore, we delve into the explosive issues in mental health. Our mission is to help you know yourself, release your anxieties and your depression, and free your mind. Only on WBAI, the voice of the voiceless, can we voiceless ones be heard. Support the show and WBAI by donating at give2wbai.org. That's the word give, the number 2, at wbai.org. Or by calling 212-209-2950. That's 212-209-2950. You can support the show and the station even more by going to give2wbai.org and giving a monthly donation of as little as $10 per month as a WBAI buddy to your favorite show on WBAI 99.5 FM.
Dear WBAI listener, we can certainly use a little help from our friends. After years of falling behind under new management, Pacifica has now gotten its financial papers in order and can apply once again for grants. That means WBAI, which is owned by the nonprofit Pacifica Foundation, can also apply for funding. And we are looking for a pro bono grant writer to help our 61-year-old station by writing grants for us. If you have time, expertise, and interest, please contact Bertol, our station manager, at bertol@wbai.org. You'd be helping to ensure the stability and growth of this historic listener-sponsored radio station. With details, please email bertol@wbai.org. That's B-E-R-T-H-O-L-D, bertol@wbai.org, with grant writer in the subject heading. Many thanks. Many, many thanks. This is listener-sponsored WBAI New York.
This is the professor, Dr. Ron Daniels. The Institute of the Black World 21st Century's Black Family Summit proudly announces the Community Cares Listening Line for Black first responders and essential workers. We're here and we're listening. The Community Cares Listening Line is a free, confidential service staffed with responsive volunteers who can provide emotional support and share information with our callers. If you're feeling anxious, afraid, distressed, burdened, or overwhelmed by a range of emotions, please call the Community Cares Listening Line at 877-719-1117. That's 877-719-1117.
And the previous program was Extinction Rebellion Radio, heard too.